We're going to talk about turkeys, of course, but first we just wanted to take a second and take some time to talk about the tradition of Thanksgiving. Obviously, tradition means different things for our diverse population, but I think for the most part, Americans associate Thanksgiving with food and family for sure, and probably sports and shopping too. However, if we step back, we'll notice that there's kind of this dark side to Thanksgiving too. It is at its foundation a celebration of an ongoing genocide against Native peoples and cultures in the United States. So for some, as you can imagine, it's a very somber day. Now, I know that this isn't the first thing that comes to mind for me, but I think that Mutt Talman Monroe, who's the co-leader of the United American Indians of New England, explained it pretty well. He said, "The issue with the Thanksgiving holiday, as it is celebrated in the United States, is that it kind of perpetuates this myth that these wonderful pilgrims came here from Europe and were so kind and good to the native people who were here, and they all lived happily ever after," which...
We're really good at telling ourselves stories.
Yes. So. I think we know that's not necessarily the case. And I think it's important to take a moment to kind of acknowledge the true history of Thanksgiving when we're talking about the holiday. And Professor Dan Brook of UC Berkeley touched on the subject of what he calls our cultural and political amnesia regarding the celebration of this holiday, saying, "We don't necessarily have to feel guilty about it, but we do need to feel something." So does this mean we shouldn't celebrate it? I don't think so. Whether you're vegan or not, I just think it's important to remember that although it has evolved to be a celebration of food and family, we should also be acknowledging its history as well. And that comment about cultural and political amnesia, that applies to animals too, especially turkeys at this time of year. From a vegan perspective, it's really interesting because for many ethical vegans, Thanksgiving is also a somber holiday because it's a day that millions of turkeys die for. And I draw a lot of parallels between the way we have treated both native peoples and animals. What it really comes down to are the questions of, are you my equal? And do I respect you? And your answer to those questions is going to determine how you treat others. Now, throughout history, colonized people have been kind of tasked with proving that they are and deserve to be part of the, quote, family of man. And they have to prove themselves worthy of independence and freedom. And they've all been asked the same question. Are you human enough to be my equal?
And so do we ask the same question about non-human animals?
I think so, yeah.
And how's that? How does that work, do you think?
I think that we domesticate animals to kind of see them as more of our equals. We kind of give them the life that we'd want to have. And we separate animals that are domesticated and non-domesticated.
Do you mean like among non-human animals, we have different circles? We have like our pets, which are like in the inner circle, and definitely we try to treat them the way we treat ourselves, or if we think we're good people. And then we have farmed animals who, there's like one section of the population that thinks they're treated really well or wants to, and then there's the actuality, right, which is what we're going to talk about.
Okay? Absolutely, yeah. And I think that based off of how we see them as equals, we kind of project these ideas of personality and worthiness onto them that we see in ourselves.
All right. That's definitely, as they say, food for thought. Okay. Thanks, Hannah, for the introduction and sort of a grounding of what this holiday is about and what it really represents. On to turkeys. So wild turkeys are large birds that are actually native to North America. But interestingly, they are not native to California, especially not Northern California, although they thrive here, because they can live in a variety of habitats, mostly forests, and they spend much of their time foraging for food. Turkeys are omnivores like we are, and they will eat various seeds, insects, fruits, and even reptiles and snakes and things. They investigate their surroundings by pecking and scratching, and they keep their feathers clean by preening and dust bathing. They're very tidy creatures, I think, and very handsome. Wild turkeys are very handsome. Domesticated turkeys are believed to descend from the South Mexican turkey and were brought to Europe by the Spanish, who had discovered them as a favorite domesticated animal of the Aztecs, which was a fascinating fact to learn, that it wasn't just the Europeans who domesticated this animal. It was actually domesticated by an ancient Native American people, the Aztecs. Anyway, fast forward to modern times, the times we live in now, where according to the group Compassion in World Farming, they estimate almost 630 million turkeys are produced for meat each year globally. Of these, around 240 million are produced in the United States and about a similar number in Europe. We're talking about massive numbers of these animals that in the U.S. are consumed or associated strictly with the Thanksgiving holiday. Anyway, according to the book More Than a Meal by Kieran Davis, who's the founder of the activist group United Poultry Concerns, modern commercial turkeys have been selectively bred for fast growth and disproportionately large breast muscles to satisfy consumer demand. They are slaughtered when they are between 9 and 24 weeks of age, and really, that's just they're just babies at that age. They become sexually mature at around 5 to 6 months, so they're slaughtered at 24 months, so that's, yeah, they're just barely getting to be adults if they're 24 weeks of age. Turkeys have been bred to grow so fast and so heavy that their bones are too weak to carry their weight, and they frequently suffer from painful lameness so severe that they try to walk on their wings to reach food and water. And then here's an interesting image that I want to put in the listeners' minds. If a 7-pound human baby grew as fast as baby turkeys are forced to grow, the human baby would weigh 1,500 pounds at 18 weeks old. This is pretty classic in commercial animal agriculture to get these young babies to grow really fast.
I remember I was just blown away the first time I read that fact. And just taking a second to really process that, like 1,500 pounds.
Right. Under no circumstance would you consider that normal.
No, I mean, not only is it too soon for them to be that large, but they should never be that large in the first place.
Yeah. And I know that the animal sanctuaries around here, the farmed animal sanctuaries around here, that's one of the hardest things to bear, is that these rescued animals, they're constantly being cared for to counteract what they're bred for, right? This breeding causes them to suffer, so the care and management of these animals becomes difficult, and a lot of it's just about pain management. So forced to grow too large, too fast, turkey raised for food develop congestive heart and lung diseases accompanied by engorged coronary blood vessels, distended fluid-filled heart sacs with abdominal fluid and gelatin-covered enlarged congested livers. Yes, this is the animal featured on the center of...
So appetizing.
Feather pecking and cannibalism are problems in intensive turkey farming. With very little in their environment to investigate and explore, turkeys often begin to peck each other. And so to reduce injury from this feather pecking, when turkeys are about a day old, part of their beaks are cut off. This procedure is painful and, of course, is performed without anesthetic in commercial agriculture. As a result, these debeaked birds cannot eat or preen properly. And they're also detoed because they can injure each other with their big feet. And the detoed birds have trouble walking. So, yeah, the animals are mutilated so that they won't hurt each other, so that they can make it through their babyhood to be slaughtered for our dinner.
It's pretty awful.
Yeah. Additionally, in commercial confinement systems, a single worker may be responsible for the care of as many as 30,000 birds, so injuries and illnesses can easily go unnoticed. According to the American animal rights group Free From Harm, the welfare of commercial turkeys is so poor that industrial production rates are set to absorb a pre-slaughter mortality rate of 7 to 10%, which is about 7 to 10 birds out of 100, 1 in 10, which translates to what they call an acceptable loss of between 20 and 26 million birds every year in the United States alone. These animals basically suffer to death without treatment and without actual malice, right? They're not killed because somebody's stomping on their heads or throwing them against a wall, which also happens. But it's an example of something worse, which is mass indifference, an economic calculation that the birds suffer for. Karen Davis's book, More Than a Meal, goes on to explain that turkeys used for breeding cannot mate naturally, and that male turkeys used for breeding at turkey hatcheries are masturbated and their semen collected to artificially inseminate the female turkeys so that they lay fertile eggs, which then go into commercial production. When the turkey babies get to be between 12 and 26 weeks old, they are ready for slaughter. And the turkeys are grabbed out of their sheds by catchers and jammed into crates and then travel without food, water, or even weather protection to the slaughterhouse, which can be varying distances away, up to 36 hours. And it's important to remember, as we've talked about on the show before, no U.S. welfare laws regulate the treatment of turkeys, chickens, or ducks, or other birds during the catching, transport, or slaughter phases. The turkeys are often suffer broken legs and wings, and many even die from rough handling during this process on their way to the slaughterhouse.
And this is especially for birds. I think when you're looking at this, they get stressed out very easily, and it can really affect them as far as their health goes. So I think that probably if we were going to have laws, it would be nice to have laws for all animals, but especially birds. I think it's important.
Yeah, and birds comprise the bulk of animals that are killed for food these days. Even though we can say that we can see levels of meat consumption declining as a population in the United States, what has happened is people are increasing the number of chickens that they're eating. And so actually more animals are suffering, more individual beings are suffering, even as the tonnage, the actual weight goes down. So anyway, so at the slaughterhouse, More Than a Meal goes on to explain what happens. Turkeys are pulled from their crates and hung by their feet upside down on a movable belt, which is, of course, very painful for a heavy bird like a turkey. The birds may or may not be stunned, that is, paralyzed while fully conscious, and they're stunned by either a handheld electrical stunner or by having their faces dragged through an electrified water bath. According to Karen Davis of the group United Poultry Concerns, the purpose of the electrical stunning is to actually paralyze the muscles of the feather follicles to allow the bird to be defeathered more easily, and actually has little to do with humane slaughter, although it's often couched in that way. The electricity shoots through the bird's eyes, eardrums, and heart and causes intolerable pain, according to research that she uncovered. And the throat cutting, with or without the prior electric stunning, does not produce a humane death. So, grisly from start to finish. And we haven't even dealt with the issue about human health implications of raising turkeys as well as chickens, but we'll talk about that in another show. But simply, I just want to say turkeys carry high levels of disease-causing bacteria such as Campylobacter and Salmonella, and that is why there are so many consumer precautions about kitchen hygiene when handling uncooked poultry in your kitchen. So just be careful out there, or avoid the risk.
Yeah, let's just avoid it. I think good animal welfare really depends on three components. You have physical well-being, mental well-being, and natural living. And in these intensive turkey farms, all three of those are compromised by overcrowding and filthy conditions, barren environments, mutilations, and rapid growth. Turkeys also suffer injury and stress through rough handling during the catching and transport and slaughter. So, I mean, you're just looking at all around, there's basically no welfare that's going on.
I think it's important to look at all these dimensions of what a bird's life, any animal's life, can be, and I think it's nice to refocus back on that. Yeah, physical well-being, mental, psychological well-being, and looking at what the animal evolved to do, and none of those dimensions is met in what I've described. So, anyway, you're listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio hosted by Jeannie Trezino and Hannah Kibler. So, Hannah, what's next? Let's hear something a little more upbeat about turkeys so that we can appreciate them and hopefully understand them a little bit better, right? It would be nice if the listeners can start to put turkeys in the realm of their pet dogs and cats instead of in this other realm as just food animals. And I know last week we talked about empathy. So what do you got for us?
Sure. So let's look at domestic turkeys. They maintain complex vocabularies, social structures, cognitive abilities, and emotional lives, even though they have been domesticated for hundreds, if not thousands, of years. They're still closely related genetically, psychologically, and neurobiologically to their wild cousins. So whatever, quote, deficiencies they may exhibit by comparison are entirely the result of their manipulation by humans. Susie Costin has worked with rescued farm animals at Farm Sanctuary, including many turkeys, for over 20 years. In a moving tribute to a turkey named Hildy, with whom she shared an 8-year friendship, Susie was quoted by the animal rights group Free From Harm, saying, "Prevalent in our society are some deep misconceptions about turkeys, that they lack intelligence, that they don't have personalities, and that there can be no kinship between humans and these animals who appear so very different from us." When speaking about Hildy, she said, "No one who met this bright, charismatic bird could doubt that turkeys are individuals with minds, feelings, and unique characters. They are individuals with whom we can have connection, individuals with whom we can share friendship." So we can see that when we allow ourselves to be patient and to observe them carefully with an open heart and open mind, that if you look at the complete animal, they're a lot more similar to us than they are different. In addition, turkeys are very family-oriented, which I think is something to remember when we're celebrating a family holiday.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
In fact, if anything, when they're in natural conditions, turkey hens are just the most devoted mothers who care diligently for their babies. Young turkeys learn crucial survival information from their mother, including what to eat, how to avoid predators, the layout of their home range, and important social behaviors. But on commercial farms, turkeys are hatched in incubators and crammed into sheds with thousands of other motherless babies. It's not only confusing and hard on the babies to never know their mother figure, but it's kind of sad when you stop and imagine that. In the turkey and other factory farming industries, economics dictates that the most primal, the most basic of all animal relationships, the connection between mother and child, is deemed to be uneconomical and is therefore severed.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point, and one that, you know, moms can relate to, hopefully, moms and dads, that these animals are, from their first seconds of life, are not given the opportunity to be natural animals in any way. And
they're alone.
And we justify that as a society because they taste good.
Yeah.
It's just, there's got to be a better reason for that kind of suffering, you know?
I agree.
So, anyway, all right. All right. On to, thanks. Oh, and I want to say, in terms of like whether you can appreciate a turkey's personality and their lively intelligence and their sense of humor and appreciate them as individuals, says as much about you as it does about the turkey. You, as an individual, have to be open to observing that and feeling that and taking action on that.
I agree. And I think when you're sitting around the table with your family this week, think about that. They also have families, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So, anyway, onward. In a story from the Bustle website, writer Rachel Krantz provided helpful comebacks to a few common cliches that vegans will hear around the Thanksgiving table. So Hannah and I are going to share them with you. So get ready to take some notes. We're on to the actual Thanksgiving dinner portion of your day, and not just the steps of the animal that before they reach your table. So you're at the table at Thanksgiving. Common cliche question number one.
Lay it on me.
Okay. But what will you eat?
You may get this question if you're the guest of a non-vegan or non-veggie host, and hopefully in advance of the meal planning, but most likely possibly after you've already sat down and they realize that they failed to note that being vegan means no milk, no butter, no eggs.
Oh my God, and they put butter in the mashed potatoes, of course.
This happens a surprising amount. So even servers at trendy restaurants often suggest cheese and fish dishes as vegan, so it's not surprising that your aunt might not get it. But I think it's more effective in the long run to just respond with kindness in this situation.
So how to respond? Try this. Actually, there are a ton of delicious things I can eat that everyone will like. Let me send you some recipe and food blog ideas, or even a few specific recipes or product recommendations. Of course, this response works better in advance of the meal, but it will also work at the table. It's like it helps you fill the gap and move on. So, common question number two, but what will we eat? If you host a vegan Thanksgiving, You will get some variation of this question if you ask people to bring vegan food. People are relatively accepting of vegetarians, but as a vegan, people can start getting annoyed and just confused. I get it. I had all kinds of snobby ideas about how snobby vegans were before I became one. And yes, it takes slightly more foresight to cook a vegan Thanksgiving meal, but in the age of Pinterest, the Google, and Trader Joe's, this is not a difficult challenge.
So what will we eat? How do you respond to this? Try this. There are a ton of things that we can all eat. Don't worry, it'll taste good. Plus, you're probably going to feel a lot better after a vegan meal, even if you eat just as much food. If you feel like bringing something, I could even pick a recipe and send it to you, or maybe you can think of it as a cooking challenge. If not, there's always wine.
You know, that's the thing. Plenty of people eat plenty of vegan stuff, right? It's just how you, what the context of that item, right? And yeah, wine or beer is a perfectly great option to bring.
Yeah. So on to common cliche number 3, but it's just not Thanksgiving without a turkey. No one has personally said this to my face, but I know that one of my good friend's parents who are hosting a vegetarian Thanksgiving this year got this question for sure.
So how to respond to this one? Try this. Actually, it is Thanksgiving for me. It makes me feel even more grateful that I can both allow animals to live and have enough food for myself to survive. It makes me super happy to see how many other options I have. Okay. We're going to skip down. I'm going to skip down all the way because we're running short on time. What we're going to go to. Here we go. One common vegan Thanksgiving cliche is, this must be so hard for you. If this is said in a condescending way, at first I just want to respond with snappishly and say, yeah, it's so hard to eat all this delicious food without the guilt of knowing it was produced by animal suffering. But Hannah, there's a better way, right?
Yeah, I think it's important to explain to people that, you know, to try to put it in perspective of it's not really hard for me because it's not necessarily something I want. And so I try to explain it to people as, you know, if you were in a country where they were eating dog meat, you know, and somebody said, this must be really hard for you to not eat this. You're like, well, you know, actually, I just don't really want that. So it's not hard for me to not have something that I don't want. And I think if you kind of explain it that way, it makes it a little easier.
Yeah, I think that's great. Okay, so let's see here. What are we going to move on to?
I think one of the questions that I get kind of often is, so you like tofurkey then?
Oh, yeah.
And this is some variation on a tofurkey joke I'm sure that you're going to hear. Maybe not exactly that, but it's usually said a little snidely. And personally, I have no desire to eat tofurkey myself, but if you like it, more power to you. So what would you say to that?
Oh, so for tofurkey, yes, I would say, yep, I like a lot of food. And if you don't like it or you haven't tried it, you can just say, actually, I've never tried it. Do you like it? And, you know, actually answering a question with another question is a really good tactic. And, so I just think that you just want to be, compassionate, not react in anger if you can help it. And, yeah.
I think it's a good thing to do because I think a lot of people maybe say that to, they're expecting you to have an argument or something, and when you respond with compassion, you know, you can actually open up a dialogue and make something useful of it.
Yeah. So, and now we come to our last comment, which is also where we started the show, and that is one of the most common comments vegans get at Thanksgiving is, but it's tradition. Right? We talked at the top of the show about how messed up it is that we spend a day celebrating a relationship that would result in the mass genocide of Native Americans. And I agree. And though I do celebrate Thanksgiving, I certainly recognize how saying, but I celebrate it as a fall harvest, not an American thing, is actually a flawed position to take. Right? But that said, as a vegan, What I'm trying to do is take the holiday and make it into an opportunity to talk about injustice in the world, or at least to think about injustice in the world, and to recognize my privilege, and to create a new tradition where I can feel grateful for the fact that as a vegan, I can reduce the suffering of others, at least when it comes to what I eat. So, and if you consider yourself, you know, a progressive or someone who's more open to these ideas and have thought about the complicated origins of the American Thanksgiving tradition, then you might also want to consider what you put on your plate. If you feel guilty about our country's history of mass murder and enslavement, then, you know, why is it necessary to celebrate Thanksgiving by putting a corpse on the middle of the table or by cooking with milk and cheese that's the result of a baby cow being torn from its mother, right?
You might feel that animal suffering is unfortunate or that it's different from our suffering as humans, and speciesism, sexism, and racism are all kind of predicated on that same logic that for them it's just different and that's just the way things are. But it doesn't have to be that way, especially in this case where the solution is so simple. If we all just opted out, simply chose to not eat the result of animal suffering for our own pleasure, we have no nutritional need to, well, that would really be something to celebrate, don't you think?
Absolutely. So that said, one way to respond to the idea that Thanksgiving is traditional or turkey is traditional is to say something like, you know, Thanksgiving is about feeling grateful and abundant and appreciative of my life and the lives of others, my family. For me, there's no better way to do that than to remind myself that I'm so privileged that I don't need to eat animal products to have a delicious, filling meal, and that I feel thankful every time I think about it. So hopefully you can say that and not sound too sanctimonious and just, like, you know, say it from your heart.
Yeah, I think tapping into how happy it makes you is a good example to show people.
Yeah. Okay, this is Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, listener-supported community radio. And we're going to cut through. The only thing I want to highlight is this Sunday, November 19th, is the Chico Vegan Thanksgiving Potluck from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Chico Women's Club. And you can get tickets in advance by going to chicovegan.com, or you can walk up between 5 to 7 p.m. at the Chico Women's Club. And the charge to attend is nominal, and there's a low-income fee also to attend. Low-income, no-charge option to attend. So we have one last bit of business to take care of, and that is the animal rights quote of the week. Go ahead and take it away, Hannah.
So the animal rights quote of the week is from Jasmine Singer, the executive director of the Our Hen House podcast and also the associate editor of Veg News magazine. And she said, "The holidays are meant to be a time of celebration and joy, and vegans have more reasons to celebrate than anyone else because they can do it without harming anyone. So enjoy. Don't let anyone get in your way. If you can't bear the sight of a carcass, come for the dessert instead. Bring food if you need to, and make sure it tastes really good. And if your annoying uncle won't leave you alone, just smile nicely and say, 'This kind of eating really works for me.'" So, Non-Human Radio is made possible through the generous contributions of KZFR listeners like you. Many thanks to Sue Hildebrand and the engineering assistants. I can't say his name.
Guillermo Mash and Sue Hildebrand, rock stars.
And thanks to you, the listeners, who helped to make the KZFR pledge drive a success. Stay tuned for Sue's show, The Real Issue, coming up next.
This has been Non-Human Radio, a production of KZFR 90.1 FM Chico. The views and opinions expressed on this broadcast are those of the hosts and do not reflect the opinions of KZFR, its board, its volunteers, or its staff. Our theme music is Ready to Fall by vegan activist rockers Rise Against.
This is Hannah Kibler and Jeannie Trezino signing off. Until next week, be different, be better, be kind.
And go vegan.
Every action is a reaction. We've got one planet and one chance.
And this is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento.